Welcome. This is Christopher Holmes, and this is another two-hour broadcast of a Zero Point Radio Show. I'd like to thank BBS, and hope we have some new listeners. I've been on air with the show now for almost 4 years and exploring a wide range of mystical spiritual teachings, modern science, creation studies, political and social issues. I'm doing the show alone today, at least for the first hour, even though I may, on the half hour, I would invite people to call in if there's anyone who would like to call in with some comments and or discussion. And then on the hour, we'll take a break, and then I have some guests for the second hour. Zero Point is a term used by Madame Blavatsky in a very important book called The Secret Doctrine, which is a classic work of Western occult science. And it was published in 1888. And in The Secret Doctrine, Blavatsky suggests that living beings have a zero point center. And she, at one point she says, like, zero points are the means by which the gods and other invisible powers clothe themselves in bodies. That's a very unusual statement, but what it suggests is that human beings have a zero point center, and the zero point center is like a portal. It is through the zero point center that the influences of higher dimensions, like higher dimensions, inform the physical body and the physical dimensions. So there is a movement from within without through zero points. And that the gods and other invisible powers within those intelligences, spiritual intelligences and so on, they inform or guide creation from within without. So life, in a way, comes into a human being through its zero point center. So a human being, in my view, has such a zero point center, and it's hard to understand exactly the different ways in which I mean this. In The Secret Doctrine, it is also stated that the suns, meaning any cosmos or world created out of the absolute, any sun or living being, expands and contracts through their own selves and hearts. That's a stanza from the stanzas of Zen, upon which Secret Doctrine is based. Okay, so it says the suns, any living entity that emerges out of the divine realm, expands and contracts through its own self and heart. So in mystical, in esoteric studies, a human being has, in a way, a real I, like the word I. You think of the word I. And in what is there an I in the human being? Like, is there a singular I in the human being? Or are there only multiple different I's? Like, what do we mean by what an I is? If we look at material science, like Isaac Asimov explains that in science, like, a person is just a collection of molecules or cells, and these have a certain life, and somehow these give you a sense of I, having an I. But really, it's only an illusion. And when death comes, then the molecules break down, and the I disappears. So there is no real I to a physical scientist in a human being. But mystics through the ages have always said that they said, know thyself. But the mystic suggests that the self we need to know, it's a mystical self. It's not our ordinary self that we need to know. Like my ordinary self, like I have a name, I would say, I am Chris Holmes. Okay, but my I is not really the name Christopher Holmes. Like that's attached to me as a label. It's someone gave me that label when I was born, but my I is not a name. Okay, so I am Christopher Holmes. So that really I am not Christopher Holmes. That's not what the I is. Or I work as a psychologist. Okay, but I am not a psychologist. That's something I've learned and had training in, but I am not that. So what is the I? What is the I in the human being? It's not your name. It's not your social identity. It's not your history. What is your I? Is there an I? People's inner experience of themselves, it feels and that there is some consistency to the I experience in the human being. So what produces that, or is that only an illusion? In modern science and psychology, the newest theory is that the sense of self is produced by certain portions of the cerebral cortex. So your sense of self is produced by this function of the cortex, the outer part of the head brain. But in the mystical view, that's all gobbledygook. Because your real self isn't produced by the mind in the head at all. And consciousness in the human being, it's not produced by the brain in the head either. In mystical teachings, the self is within the heart. And the self is described as self-illuminating like the sun. So the idea is like you have a God spark within you, or a divine spark. And it's called such in different traditions. In Kabbalah, it's described as a divine spark, as it is in Sufism. In the Vedas of India, it's called the Jiva Atma, the individual self. And Lord Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita says, I am the self seated in the hearts of all living beings. And it's said that in the Gita, it says within the heart is not only the super soul, like Lord Krishna or Parabrahman, the super soul is in the heart, but also the individual soul, the Jiva Atma. So that you have the Paramatma, the infinite self, and the Jiva Atma are both said to reside within the heart. Okay, so in all the esoteric teachings of the different religions, in Christianity and Judaism and in Kabbalah, in Sufism, in the secret doctrine of Blavatsky, in native teachings and other spiritual psychologies, the self is really within the heart. And that is what the mind does not know. See, the mind is trying to search for self or understand things, but the mind in the head, it is said that the mind longs to know the mysteries of the heart. So from a mystical point of view, there are higher dimensions to the human heart. It is not simply a material organ within the human being, but it has a higher dimensional nature. That something happens in the physics and science of the heart to bring consciousness into a human being. So in my writing, I explain what I call the heart doctrine. And that's the idea that a human consciousness and the I experience originate within without through the dimensions of the heart. And that there's a higher dimensional physics and a higher dimensional metaphysics to what the human heart actually is. It's not simply an organ. It's not, the heart is not simply a physical organ. There's also a psychical level to the heart, a spiritual level to the heart, and ultimately a divine source emanation. So I'm saying that the heart is really a higher dimensional entity. There are higher dimensions to it. Okay, and the eye originates out of this heart center, and even in a growing fetus in the womb, you see the heart forms first, and the blood flow. See, I connect consciousness and life in a human being is connected to the blood flow. In mystical teachings, it's taught that the self helps to originate the heart's beat. It provides that basic pulse in life that brings life into the heart. And the energies of the soul are circulated, they're connected to the blood and the oxygenation of the body. And the oxygen in the air is like the element of air, which helps to anchor the fire or spirit into the water base of the body. So that the human being is ensouled through the breath and the oxygenation of the body, and that spreads life and consciousness all through the human being. So in my view, as a psychologist trying to understand what is human consciousness, I consider modern science has a completely false understanding, because they think the brain and the head produces consciousness, and that the consciousness is only up in the human being's head. Okay, they call it the head doctrine. Whereas in mystical teachings, there can be consciousness in the mind, in the head, but you can also be conscious within your feet, or your stomach, or your sexual organs, or your hands, or other parts of your body, that consciousness can be throughout the body. And it's connected to blood flow. So this is an alternative idea of what human consciousness is and how the eye is really connected to the heart. See, in modern kind of psychology of consciousness, the main thing people focus on is left brain, right brain. And they think that, you know, your thinking and intuition and such comes from the thinking from the left and the intuition and gestalt knowing from the right, and you should be a left brain thinker or a right brain thinker. But in a way, from a mystical perspective, no, the deeper level of self has to do with this awakening of the heart and the establishment of the attainment of that experience within the heart. And it said the self in the heart has a bliss sheath, which is described as the size of a small grape. And if your consciousness abides in the bliss sheath, then in your life you feel filled with blissfulness, which I would say is the condition we come from, is this kind of state of inner blissfulness within the heart. But as people grow up, they lose that inner feeling of the heart. And they become, because of conflicts and hurts and holding their breath and so on and suppressing their emotions through their life, people form knots about the heart, which helps deaden the feeling of the heart. And they do that for self-protection. As their feelings are hurt, they hold their breath and hold feelings in and hurts in. And people become knotted about the heart. And they can grow up and then have less and less of that heart feeling in them. But a person's essence is connected to the heart, whereas their mind in their head is more their acquired ideas and influences through educational system. So all the information you acquire, which you take in from outside of yourself, and that's all stored in the mind and accumulated there as knowledge. But all that information and knowledge and ideas is not really what yourself is. And yourself is connected to the heart. And in Gurdjieff explains that most human beings, we know only two lower states of consciousness, which is the sleep state, which can be with dreams or without dreams, and then the waking sleep state, where Gurdjieff says, the waking sleep, it's like we're awake, but we're not properly conscious. And our mind and our emotions and such, these things are always turning, and we have all separate little eyes. We do not know real I. So Gurdjieff explains that humankind is in this state of like being half awake, half asleep. And that we have to attain, he says, to the state of self-consciousness, which he says is the inherent birthright to humankind, that human beings, if we develop properly, we would attain to the this experience of the state of self-consciousness, and that would be the next level in human evolution. But human beings think they've already attained self-consciousness in modern times. But I would say the whole of science, in a way, is completely fraudulent. They think that we're only material beings. They think that human beings are produced through a long evolutionary process by random genetic changes and arbitrary influences. Okay, so they think we human beings have no spirit or soul nature. So I would say all of modern thinking on the nature of human beings is off base. They've lost this science of the soul, and that human beings do have souls, and we are not simply the physical body. In a way, the self inhabits the body. It's clothed in the body. There's not only a physical body, but there are subtle bodies. So you have an astral body and a mental body. And then you have higher being bodies on higher spiritual planes of being. You have three lower bodies and three higher bodies. So I'm saying human being is a multidimensional being, and the self inhabits the material body, and it originates out of the heart, and it's connected to the blood, and a human being is ensouled through your breath. And the breath is very important. In Kabbalah, there are said to be five levels to the life of the soul, and each of these is connected to the level of the human breath. Blavatsky sees all spiritual manifestation, spirit, is related to the word breath. So in Blavatsky's creation science, she says before creation happens, what you have is the eternal, ceaseless breath. And with that, you have the eternal parent space. And these are the mother and father principles in nature. So, okay, the ceaseless breath is the active principle, the father principle. And the breath becomes spirit. And that generates light and heat and motion. And the eternal parent space is the divine mother principle. And the eternal parent space is said to be seven dimensional. So in mystical teachings, seven is said to be the number of the divine mysteries. That this pattern of the sevenfoldness of things is inherent to all phenomena, including human beings. So a human being has seven chakras in the subtle anatomy. Okay, there are seven levels of possible human evolution. There are seven rows of elements to the periodic tables. Hyperspace is seven-dimensional. When creation happens, there are said to be seven planes created, and each of these is sevenfold. So there's said to be 49 planes of existence. See, it's an ancient mystical teaching concerning the sevenfoldness of creation. So in modern science, scientists think always dualistically. You read modern scientists, they all think dualistically. They think there's a mind and the body. That's how modern psychology is defined, as the science of behavior and the mind. Okay, so you have a body and you have your mind in your head. And it's a dualistic understanding. Or they think there's left brain and right brain. And half of your consciousness is in one half and half in the other half of the brain. Or they think there's the conscious and the unconscious. Okay, but they deny the existence of higher states of consciousness. See, modern science is always dualistic, whereas mystical teachings suggest a magical formula of the universe is that the one is divided by three and yields seven. Just like if you took white light and divided it by a three-sided prism, you would produce a spectrum of seven colors. So in mystical views, this is a model of the the inner nature of human beings, that they're structured on these principles of how the one becomes three and then seven. Just like white light divided by a prism. And that in mystical teachings, you see light is the structural essence of creation. Okay, even in the book of Genesis, and God says, let there be light. And there was light. So, and all the potentialities for matter and different forms, life forms, are contained within that light. So the idea that the worlds of creation might be based on these same principles of the threefold and sevenfoldness, it would seem to make sense if light is this structural essence of creation. So coming back a little bit, so what is, I've talked about what is the nature of self, and I tried to articulate the heart doctrine, trying to understand these ancient mystical teachings about the nature of the human heart. And mystics suggest that there's actually a holographic physics to the heart. See, in one of the Upanishads, it is said, the earth, the moon, the stars, all that is in the outer universe is within the lotus of the heart. Okay, so what this suggests is that everything contained in the outer world is somehow contained holographically within the human heart. And there's different mystical accounts of people experiencing this higher dimensional consciousness of the heart, and experiencing different states of samadhi that come with that, and enlightenment. So this is actually suggesting that there's a higher dimensional holographic physics to a human heart. So in my work, I tried to explore some of that, how that could be so, and what that means, what that could mean. And these ideas from mystical sources, in ways they're perfectly consistent with the ideas of modern quantum physics. In fact, many ideas in modern physics illustrate what the mystics have been saying through centuries. It's only within the last 20 years that scientists have arrived at the idea that our universe emerged from a singularity point, a singular point, out of what they call the quantum vacuum. And in science, they describe the quantum vacuum as seemingly empty and void, but really there may be a huge amount of energy and potential all latent within the vacuum itself. And this is called its zero-point energy. This zero-point energy is latent within space itself. And it's an argument in science and physics is how much energy is really latent within space. How much energy? And some physicists estimate the amounts, and it's like there's more energy latent at the zero-point Planckian levels in the quantum vacuum. There's more energy in a cubic centimeter of space than there is in all the matter in the known universe. Okay, so the idea is at zero point levels, there's this sea of infinite energy and potential that permeates all of space. So instead of the quantum vacuum being empty, space is really full. And it's what the mystics call the divine plenum, which is this kind of sea of infinite energy and potential. So scientists now believe the universe emerged out of nothingness at the beginning of time, the seeming nothingness of the quantum vacuum, and they emerged from a point, and then they believe it expanded through a period of rapid inflation to something the size of a grapefruit, as one physicist described it. That's called the rapid inflationary era in modern science. And Blavatsky described a similar thing. She describes how the universe emerges from a point, and then there's a it thrills through space, the energies of it, and there's what she calls the dropping of the world egg. So you go from a point and it like drops a world egg. And then there's a continued expansion from within without. So this idea in modern science of the rapid inflationary era is similar to the dropping of the world egg. And then space-time continues to expand within without. Blavatsky describes the universe as expanding when the breath of the Father is upon it. So the breath during creation, the exhalation, is the breath of the Father or Spirit. But over time, Blavatsky says that it shifts and the breath of the Mother touches the world, and the Mother ingathers the universe back to her bosom. This is said in the stanzas of Zen. So it's the idea the universe expands from the heart, but as a universe or a living being approaches death, then all those energies contract back to the heart. So you expand and contract through your own selves and hearts. Human beings are complex entities. Like what modern science thinks is really very superficial, simply that you're a material biological being that lives and dies with your body, and that you have no spiritual or soul nature or divine nature. And in a way, people have been fed this, I would say, as propaganda through the educational system and through the media for the past century. Over a century, there's been this denial of spirit and soul. And instead, we have a materialist science philosophy. And, a simply material view of what a human being is. And all the sacred teachings of the different religions and of mystical teachings have been suppressed and kept out of the educational system. And the idea of physical evolution has been promulgated as being scientific, whereas really it's quite fraudulent. See, the scientists attribute all the growth of evolution to random and accidental factors all the time. Happenstance and random genetic changes. They don't see patterns of design in creation. So, I'm losing my train of thought a little bit from what I've been talking of. I think there may be someone coming in on the telephone there. Was there someone there? Did you catch where I was? Anyone in the background there? Oh, okay. I guess not. Okay, so I'm talking about mystical studies and what is a human being. And what in my work as a mystic psychologist, I describe myself as a mystic psychologist and mystic scientist. And I've studied the esoteric teachings now for 35 years, trying to understand what is the nature and origin of human consciousness. And the main concepts that I explain that in a fairly unique way is that firstly, the heart doctrine. And once you realize the heart doctrine, it's already in all the different traditions. In a way, my work simply is to bring it out and show how this is the common element in different religious traditions. See, the heart doctrine is common to Judaism and Kabbalah, to Islam and Sufism, to Christianity, and to Hindu philosophy and teachings. So the heart doctrine is something that unifies the spiritual psychologies of different religious teachings, as well in Tibetan Buddhism. The Dalai Lama elaborates the heart doctrine in his books. So the heart doctrine is a very important idea, and it ties into the question of the existence of a human spirit or soul. And I believe that the world elites, through the past century, just as they've prevented humankind from having zero-point energy technologies, okay, which might cut into their oil profits, or having cars that run on water that might cut into their oil profits, or they don't want people to have vitamins and herbs and natural food medicines because it cuts into their profits of the pharmaceutical companies. So they try to suppress all these things that work so that people are forced to use their pharmaceutical petroleum-based medicines. You see, in all different areas, humankind have been kept in the dark and deceived. And one of these areas, you're deceived about history. You know, people are kind of were told, you were led to believe that crazy Muslim terrorists attacked New York City on September 11th, 2001. And the whole thing was a fraud. It wasn't. Hello? Okay, I hope I'm still on there, that something happened here to the phone. The whole thing was a fraud the whole time. And similarly, we have all these false flag terrorist events. And the whole of what we're taught through history has been fraudulent. We've been deceived as to the causes of the wars. Deceived about our role as democracies and how our political representatives represent us and stand for us. Okay, something, I don't know, if Don's in the background. Don, can you confirm if I'm still on air? Something happened to the phone line. I don't know if I am still on. Yeah, sorry about that. I was on the air the whole time. I wasn't sure. But I was talking about how the public has been deceived through so much of our lives. See, everything we've been told in a way has been a lie and distorted. You know, these new energy technologies have been kept from the public. You know, you've been led to believe there's oil shortages when really there are massive supplies all in Dakotas and other massive supplies off Alaska, massive supplies down by Haiti. There's lots of oil. There always has been, but the whole thing has been a fraud. And then you probably don't even need oil. You could have had water cars, but people couldn't have become rich off you and sucked your vitality through all these advances in science that have been withheld from people in all different areas, and all this corporate greed. Okay, so, and in a way, these elites and these have taken control of our governments, and we were led to believe that, oh, we were democratic nations, and that our senators and MPs, members of parliament in Canada, that they have integrity and they stand for and represent the people. And in a way, the whole thing's been a fraud, and it has for decades. You know, there have been the shadow governments of the United States and in Canada and elsewhere, and the governments of the countries have not been democracies in the way that the leaders of the parties and your statesmen are selected by the elites behind the scenes. And our governments have come more and more to serve the international banksters and the corporate elite, and not to serve the people of the country anymore. I mean, just think how incredible it is. You go outside, and here we are all across North America being sprayed by chemtrail spraying. And they spray people with all kinds, aluminum and barium, other heavy metals, arsenic, viral matter, carcinogenic matter. And people are all breathing this in. And the animals and the pets and the children, more and more people are gaining Alzheimer's. And this is so incredible. And our governments allow this to be carried out. In fact, it's even done. It's one of the functions of the U.S. Air Force, is this chemical spraying of its own citizens. You know, this is biological terrorism carried out against people in our society because of these population genocidal schemes of these international synagogue of Satan, really. I think the best quotation is from J. Edgar Hoover. This strikes me as most valuable. When I woke up to all the deception, he says, the individual is handicapped by coming face to face with a conspiracy so monstrous he cannot believe it exists. And in a way, that's what's happened. In Western society, over the past 50 years and longer, we've been completely deceived by a conspiracy so monstrous that most people couldn't believe it would exist. See, most people can't imagine being so deviant, so psychopathic as what the world elites have been. I mean, you look at, the last 50 years through most of my life, I thought of America as this kind of land of freedom, and America kind of spread democracy around the world and stood up for people and bringing about a new, age of abundance and wealth, and Americans were so generous, which they are. But then we find out the whole thing's been a fraud. Your CIA has been one of the world's leading terrorist organizations for the past 50 years since its inception. It's overthrown governments around the world, democratic governments, and put in puppet governments. It's sponsored all kinds of terrorism around the world and torturing of people. And the CIA, America hasn't been protecting people at all. It's become a tyrant. It's a tyrant. It's a world's bully with military bases, 700 of them around the world, and bringing us closer and closer to conflict with China and Russia. America's, it's not America, it's not the American people, but it's become insane, the amount of money's put into weapons of destruction, the wealth of the world, and all the time, always based on lies. All the wars are based on lies. America goes over and murders over 2 million Vietnamese people and sprays their land everywhere, all based on lies, all Gulf of Tonkin lies. It was all lies. It's never justice, The CIA, they're all involved in the Cambodian killing fields and Central America, South America, committing terrorism around the world, CIA and Mossad. They're terrorist organizations, committed terrorism around the world. And yet the people in the CIA think they are protecting or working, fighting for America. Their oaths are to America. They betray their own countries because of the shadow elements in these organizations. It's really become quite shameful. It's unbelievable. You wake up to what's gone on over the last decades. How come there's never any peace in the world? And now we're in a situation like there's wars all over the world. And anyone who's not under the dominance of the New World Psychiatric Order is considered a terrorist state. So Iran, this empire building PNAC people in the state of the U.S. say they want to bomb Iran, next for Israel, another war for Israel, more human suffering, murder a few more million people so you can have your stupid pipelines. It's so insane. It's what's been done in Iraq is so insane. In the Middle East, another 2 million people have been murdered, all senselessly. 5-6 million refugees. the war criminals, people, they get Nobel Peace Prizes. It's like the more people you murder, the more likely you're going to get a Nobel Peace Prize. You know, Henry Kissinger got a Nobel Peace Prize. He's been involved in the murder of over 60 million people, working with the Chinese and Cambodia and Vietnam and Central America, all around the world. Multiple mass murder. Probably helped murder 10 times all the number of people claimed to have died in the Holocaust. You know, what is it about the Holocaust that allows Zionists to mass murder other people? Is it because they were injured the first time, so they have the right to murder other people so that they're not murdered? Like, is this insane? This doesn't represent Jewish people. The Jewish people are subject to the same brainwashing and conditioning and deceits. You know, you look at Israel. Israel is a fascist state. And the people there, they've been conditioned so badly they don't even realize it. And they live in fearfulness. The world has gone insane when one wakes up. If humankind, imagine if humankind had ever learned to live civilly around the world. Hey, ever lived. There would have been so much food and abundance for people all around the world. And when you have these mass migrations that go on, like Mexican people flooding into the United States, millions and millions of them. The problem is those Mexicans would probably prefer to stay home, but they're being persecuted and impoverished and such in Mexico that they flee to find other life conditions. See, they shouldn't even have to be fleeing. You know, if it weren't for the world elites and all the problems they create, then you wouldn't need these huge migrations of people, which then cause problems in other countries. What's been done throughout human history, and all the while, people are deceived about it, and people are deceived about the medicines and the vaccinations. And it's absolutely incredible that children in the United States now have like 24 inoculations by the time they're 6 years old. It's like you're murdering your children. Are you people insane? And you give all these vaccinations to your military, and the government experiments on the military. They kill your own military. You know, it's so outrageous. You know, the heads of the military should be so ashamed of themselves. And like, yes, well, like, why doesn't anyone wake up? You know, why, you know, these people are destroying their own nation. How could we have become so deceived and it's terrible what's happened to humankind on this planet, and the kind of, they're threatening now, bringing massive economic failure across the states and to impoverish people. I heard the other day someone estimate the wealth of the Rothschilds at $300 trillion. You know, you look at the world elites. These people have amassed such incredible fortunes, all based on criminalities, criminal wars, criminal taxations, criminal activities. When I woke up to all of this 3 years ago, I just couldn't believe it, and somehow I thought, wow, you know. When I learned 9/11 was an inside job, it had nothing to do with Muslims. The whole thing is about creating artificial Muslim terrorism. Yeah. And the whole thing is based on fraud, you know? It's like the motto of the Mossad is, by way of deception, we wage war. So Israel doesn't have to attack Iraq, they just stage something in the States, and the American people hop on the bandwagon to, you know, be cowboys, and you go over there as cowboys and murder a couple million more people and traumatize hundreds of thousands of your own soldiers, own young men and women of the United States. Are you, as American people, insane? You are, that you allow these things to be done to your young men and women in your services? That, and why are the men and women in these services? You and people need to wake up. You know, we need people in the CIA and the FBI and the military to you know, honor your oaths to your country and to your God and your sense of morality, innate morality within your human heart. You know, we need to turn around and seize the real terrorists in the nations. Yeah, seize the real terrorists. See, that's what has to be done around the world. We have to apply existing anti-terrorist legislation to seize the assets of all those involved in terrorist activities. Yeah, we need, and then we just, the seizure of the Rothschilds and the Rockefellers and the estates of all these people who are guilty of multiple mass murders and criminal activities in all areas of society through their inoculations programs, their chemtrail programs. All this is biological terrorism, which is going on against the American people. These people are terrorists. They did 9/11. It wasn't Osama bin Laden and his reindeer. It wasn't. Reindeers can't fly. See, we have to wake up as a human race. Really, Oklahoma City bombing, inside job. Assassination Kennedy, inside job. Another inside job. Go around all, and we're, the public's always deceived by the corporate media. These pathological liars that pretend they're reporters, that they serve the people. These people also are guilty of treason, accessory after the fact, multiple mass murderers, accessories to, you know, administration of toxic substances through the vaccination. All the media assets should all be seized as assets owned by terrorists, who have used the media to intentionally deceive the American public. So all the assets of the media should be seized by the government. And then the people in the media, they can still all have their jobs, but they can run their own media outlets. They take the ownership away from the criminals who have done this through the media. Completely intentionally deceived the American public about all of their criminal activities. That's what they've done. They've used the media intentionally in this criminal way and committed all kinds of crimes against the American people, people around the world, all based on lies. See? So what if we could really establish justice in the world? Imagine that. I like John Lennon, imagine. Like, imagine a world without wars. Imagine where there was a world where justice, where mass murderers were actually brought to trial for their crimes against human beings, millions of human beings. Imagine that. Real justice in the world. That's what we need to bring about on this world. We need the restoration of human justice. And these people in the New World psychiatric disorder, these people are criminally insane. They're severely criminally insane. And I say that as a forensic psychologist who studied and worked with criminals at 15 years in prison system. These people at control of our nations, these people are insane. They think that they have a megalomania. They have this vision of a new world order, and they're conditioned and through their life and brought up into this and thinking they have special privilege. They can murder other people to line their fancy pants with more money. If they want a new oil line, they're allowed to go over there and mass murder people. You know, that's fine for their corporate profit and their corporate lies. You look at a company like Monsanto's. Its practices in India have apparently brought about the suiciding of 100,000 Indian farmers because of Monsanto's. And you look what the corporations like that do throughout the world, putting aspartame in all the diet stuff, and it's another neurotoxin. All these insane things being done to the American people. See, we have to wake up, realize who the terrorists are, really are, and then seize their assets. See, America is so deeply in debt now. I understand Obama, over the last year and a half, they've given approximately $28 trillion to the international banksters. They've impoverished America to such an extent, Americans and their children would never recover it from it for generations and generations. The only way to deal with the situation is to seize the assets of the real terrorists. Okay, you seize their assets and you'd find that it would pay off the American debt. And it would pay off the debts of all the countries all around the world. See, that's what you need to do. All the monies of the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank, all these criminal elites who have practiced their predatory financial colonialism around the world, you just take all their assets and you let all the countries of the world have their national debts reduced to zero by the year 2012. You see, you take back the wealth of all the nations of the world and you stop wasting the wealth all the time on methods and means of mass destruction. You know, in the United States, you've got 1,000 laboratories developing biological weapons. For what? For what purpose? You know, a purpose to be used against the American people. You pay for it and then they can spray you with it from your skies. See, we have to take back our countries and we have to bring about the restoration of the rule of law, law and order. People have committed very, very serious crimes against humanity through the invasion of Afghanistan based on fraud, the invasion of Iraq based on fraud. These are some very serious international war crimes, and the people responsible need to be brought to justice, and the American public needs to become informed about the role your nation has played throughout the world. So it's a crazy world. It's waking up to a crazy world, you know. So in the whole thing, so just saying how we've been deceived by the elites, and the elites have this most superficial kind of philosophy based on people like Bertrand Russell. They have all these fraudulent kind of pseudo-intellectual theorists who develop their policies and so on. And they're so superficial, really. You read people like Bertrand Russell, they're obviously a pompous kind of stuffed English intellectual in the worst sense. And so much of their philosophy, it's small-minded. It's small-minded. They're megalomaniacs. Our nations are run by the three P's, I call them, perverts, pedophiles, and psychopaths. And we have to take our, while we were sleeping, we've allowed this to happen in our societies, and it's terrible that we see the moral degradation of our nations and the people more and more deceived. But now at least we see through TruthNet radio shows and all the information that comes out through the internet, people are actually waking up. And we need to wake up and we need to actually have the application of international law and get at the bottom of 9/11 and all these other terrorist events and how people in the New World Order, we need to come up with their litany of crimes and have them charged. And we need worldwide truth hearings where these people are brought before world audiences. And this is people around the world will watch this. And if we on planet Earth could ever take our nations and world back from these new world psychiatric disordered elites, the scum that rose to the top of the waters of life, if we could ever take our countries back from them, there'd be a whole new era and millennium of prosperity on the earth and new scientific innovations and new explorations of the solar system and beyond, and the explorations of human consciousness. These people have deceived us in almost every area, through the educational system, about what we are as human beings, how we have no soul. So they didn't want religions. They wanted to portray science and religion as dualistic opposites. And it's been fraudulent. Science has become fraudulent. It's all random evolution by accident in the godless universe. It's all fraudulent. Human beings have spirit soul natures. And there's all kinds of scientific evidence for it. Has been for thousands of years. There's a whole science of consciousness. Human beings don't know yet what you are. Human beings are asleep as to what you really truly are. I believe that in the next generations, we'll learn to travel the solar system in our subtle bodies, and we'll acquire psychical and mystical and cosmical capacities. These things are there for us. If we could ever have an awakening within the educational system and come out from all the dogmas and influences of these elites who have so dummied down the mass population. In every area of our lives, they've tried to lead people into depravity, undermining the family, undermining love, undermining relationship, always wanting perversity and bestiality and pedophilia. And all, you know, it's terrible. All the satanic influences and, you know, all these dark, dark societies. Yeah, while we were sleeping, they came and stole it all away. So, you know, maybe we're going to... somehow this year, 2010, I felt that this year things are maybe going to start turning. You know, I was going to be on radio today. I was going to insult the Royal Canadian Mounted Police about some articles in the paper we'll hear about later. And I find out today, oh, the RCMP made some major arrests in British Columbia and rescued the series of children, over a dozen children from a pedophile ring. Like, wow, like really, you know, that's great to the RCMP. You see, we need our CIA and RCMP we need our military to serve honorably our nations and not to serve these psychopathic New World Order elites. You see, we have to have this turning. And we have to bring these people to trial around the world, seize their assets, and pay off the nations of the world. And we'd have a new millennium. Okay, so I imagine that. And once I read a little bit in Blavatsky's Volume 3 of The Secret Doctrine, at one point in there she says, what is white magic? And she says black magic is in service of a person's ego and lower self. But white magic, she says in white magic, you don't ask for in white magic you would ask of God that God bring down these people's karma upon themselves. See, you wouldn't ask directly to hurt those people, but you would ask God or the Lord to bring down their karma upon themselves. And see, that's what we want. We want instant karma. We want these people brought forward before the world to face the terrible crimes they are continuing to commit against us, citizens in North America, citizens of this planet, and around the world. How the people have suffered from the criminal activity of these New World Order elites over decades and decades. We've never been free from it. We've never known a sane society. We've never known a government that served its people. Our governments have never done that. And we need to take them back and bring about a new age. So we have to be brave of heart and remember we do have souls. If you don't feel the soul life within you, then that's your problem because you have to cultivate it and awaken to it. And I hope some of my rambling opening today has covered some of the bases here. Okay, so we're gonna hear a song next and take a 5-minute break, and I'm gonna be back on in 5 minutes with the first guest, BK from Toronto. Okay, so if Don's in the background there, Don, can we hear Sacred Lands by Robin Shaw?
I remember all the stories my grandpa used to tell about a time in this sacred land. The buffalo did roam out on the open plain. The eagle soared high up in the sky. There wasn't any shame, there wasn't any pain. Yes, he said, they were so very proud. They lived a simple life, Mother Nature did provide. There was no law, but there was no crime. Gun. They took away our land. They put us on the run. Locked us on this reservation. Changed our ways of life. Promises were made, but they were only lies. Chiefs from long ago, they will be by your side. Into the battleground, a warrior you will ride, armed with years of wisdom, many years of pride.
Well, that nice piece was from Robin. Thank you, Robin. Okay, so we're trying to just get the next guest on. And, you know, I often have Canadian activists on and other activists I've had on also from New Zealand and Australia and the States. And today I'm bringing on Black Krishna, who works in Toronto. And he's been on the Zero Point Radio show once previously or twice. And then on the half hour, I'm going to bring on the one of the founders of the Agora newspaper in Vancouver, British Columbia, which is like a new alternative truth newspaper that comes out, I think, bi-monthly, hopefully. Okay, I don't know. Is Black Krishna, are you there? BK?
Yes, sir.
Oh, yeah, good. Thanks for joining us, BK, from Toronto. BK, you're usually out on the streets of Toronto on Saturdays. Could you describe what you and friends and fellow warriors are doing out there?
Sure. I got a call from a couple of my colleagues today, Brad and Yuri. They're also associated with the freedomlink.org as well as truthseekers.com. They're out flyering today. And basically, we put up posters. We flyer parked cars. We have, the last 6 months, especially during the summer and the H1N1 pandemic scare, we were on the streets of Dundas Square in the very center of Toronto with a table and a truth umbrella, basically an umbrella with truth or logos on it. And we gave out thousands of flyers and DVDs, and at least 100,000 people a day saw us standing there. So we think we had an impact, and we think that... you know, we think that that's the best thing to do. The best thing to do is to try and reach the public in polite ways as opposed to keep the conversations internal where they're interesting, but not enough people outside ourselves get informed to make as much of a difference as we think we need to make.
No, they don't. What are some of the DVDs you give out? What are some of the films that you've promoted?
Well, my colleague Mark at TorontoTruthSeekers.com does a lot of the DVD burning, takes a lot of his own time and money to do this, and has a massive selection of about 50, 60 DVDs for people to choose from. So what ended up happening is people would come over to our table at Dundas Square, and they would just look through the list of DVDs and the small descriptions if they weren't familiar with them, and they'd pick the ones that they were the most interested in, or... if they were people that were already somewhat familiar with this, they'd come by and say, you know, do you guys have the Obama deception or something like that? So we tried to keep a wide variety on hand. And then especially during the H1N1 pandemic, we made sure to get out some important information from Sherry Tenpenny, Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, and others about their use of vaccines. So we were giving those away for free to anybody who showed an interest. The other ones we take a dollar donation for sometimes just to help cover our costs.
Yeah, you need to. I think Endgame is such an important movie because it really gives you an overview of the whole insane system. I think I would think that must be one of your choices to promote, Endgame.
Absolutely, and one of the projects that we're discussing here in Toronto is trying to raise $10,000 to distribute 100,000 copies of Endgame throughout the city.
Wow.
This would be a great project, a long-term project for us to do. One of the things that I see with respect to our movement, Christopher, is that there aren't a lot of projects that keep us together, whereas when it comes to the New World Order, our enemies, they've got projects that keep them together for hundreds of years. And so we need to have a few things to aim for. And if there's something like that that's at least on our agenda to do and that we're taking steps to do and that we're having some success, you know, attempting, that's something that we can reveal to other people, which would have, I believe, a massive effect on them. If truthers talk to their friends and their friends say, what are you up to? And you say, you know, I'm Googling stuff and watching YouTube videos, then they're not going to be nearly as impressed with your dedication towards something you're passionate about. As if you say, you know, I was on the streets, you know, for several hours, gave out thousands of flyers, put up dozens of posters, and we have projects like get 100,000 copies of Endgame dropped on the city of Toronto to reveal the giant eugenics agenda so that, you know, people can resist it on every level. If you say something like that to somebody whose, you know, main interests are, you know, going to work and then finding a way to relax at the end of the day, you know, they'll be... impressed by the scale of your activism and the optimism of your activism as opposed to, you know, merely what you've sort of uncovered from a bunch of esoteric knowledge available on the internet. So that's a project that we'd like to undertake. And Endgame, I agree with you, Christopher, certainly a DVD that everybody should see, especially because it's now about 3 years old and everything that was in Endgame has more or less been proven since then.
Yeah, Alex Jones is an amazing film producer. I think you just see his expertise, like The Fall of the Republic, is brilliantly produced. He's a remarkable fellow. I'm a real Alex Jones fan. And I know for a few reasons people have critiqued him, but really he's an amazing, I think he's the investigative journalist of our century, really. You know, his movies are so valuable. Have you seen Fall of the Republic? It just shows you the whole underlying financial fraud and such.
I have, and you know, I'd say that nobody's above criticism. I'm not above criticism. You're not. Nobody on earth is. But I would say, and I've said for a couple of years now, just in terms of figuring this out, Alex Jones is the most important figure in political history.
Yeah.
And he's more important than anybody that's come before him, simply because of his ability to reach more people. You know, 50, 100, 200 years ago, it was a lot more difficult. Now with technology, any of us can reach an obscene amount of people if we try hard. But he's the one that did, and he's the one that did it well, and he's been proven right. And the fact that it's not all about him, you know, there's no conspira-pope in this game. There's no, like, guy. And I disagree with him on a couple of things. But you know, the bottom line is that, you know, he puts on other activists, puts on people doing stuff, not just academics, not just, you know, let's have a professor, you know, talk about, give us an explanation for this, so we're satisfied with the explanation, even if we're not satisfied with the situation. He has people like that on, too, but he has journalists, doctors, whistleblowers, and activists, most importantly, people that are taking action about these issues. So that's why I don't believe that he's, you know, fake. That's why I don't believe the criticisms of him, by and large, are justified. You know, there are some that are justified, in my opinion, and there's probably ones I don't make that are as well. But overall, if you look at his body of work and his impact and on how he's trying to approach this struggle, by using his platform to give other people a platform and a vehicle, you can see that he's probably the truth. And I believe that Alex Jones is the most important figure in political history. If you look at all the other figures in political history and see the scope of their achievements, you can stack Jones right up, you know, with the best of them, with respect to what he's done when we needed something done.
Well, that's remarkable you say that, and thank you for saying that. I absolutely agree. I mean, you even see he has a figure like Ron Paul on there who kind of acknowledged that, you know, it was Alex's support of him that, like, half of the people coming into him, like, were brought in through Alex. And Alex, I mean, he's an amazing as a filmmaker when you think of it. He encourages people, you know, buy a copy of my CD and go out and replicate it and give it out. I mean, you know, you just don't see that anyone in Hollywood say, you know, take my DVD and give it out. You know, never, obviously, you know. And he, in a way, I guess, has created that whole, been such a central, so central to this whole movement of being out on the streets, giving out DVDs, talking to people, and that kind of grassroots activism is just so incredibly valuable. We just have to have enough, the masses of people being woken up is really the only way we can turn things around from the kind of terrible situation we're in.
Well, I agree with you, Chris, and as a philosopher myself, you know, one of the aphorisms that I've come up with is pride is the source of all accomplishment. If you're not proud of who you are, what you can achieve, you're not going to get anything significant done. And Alex Jones, and I know there's, you know, bad elements associated with pride too, but I also know that if you see people typing, you know, IMHO online every time they say something, in my humble opinion, you can see that the globalists, the scientific dictatorship, that the New World Order is crafting is all about making us feel powerless and making us feel like we can't do anything. So the fact that Alex Jones goes out there with so much pride, he's on the streets with a bullhorn, you know, he's a big, you know, he's not a tough guy per se, but he's a tough guy, and he'll admit that and say that sometimes. But the point is that you get a guy like that who's proud of what he was able to figure out, what he was able to communicate, and proud enough in terms of, you know, and he can take pride in his achievements. We all need to see that, because what I see happening, especially in Canada, where I think we've been whacked, you know, harder with mind control than perhaps even the U.S. in many ways, what you see happening is people are not confident in anything they can produce independently. anything they can think of, and so on. They're not as confident as they should be, because otherwise we'd see much more innovation, much more activism. You know, Alex Jones just says, they're shutting down a gun show, I'm going down there with a bullhorn, and this is wrong. And
yeah.
he'll do it.
Yeah.
And so if you have more individuals like that in this country, or more groups like that in this country, who instead of, you know, worrying about, you know, who's going to be there, or, you know, how's it going to be, or, you know, they just do the right thing. And they have some pride in their ability to deal with that situation, and confidence. Confidence is really, you know, one of the keys to this. They have some confidence in their situation. And then they just do what's logical at this time in history. So here in Canada, Christopher, I'm afraid that we are under phenomenal mind control. And I know this because I've been trying to for a year. You've gotten some of these emails. I've been trying to, for a year, you know, get people across Canada to get more active on these issues, to communicate more with each other, to start sharing things. I just proposed something recently, with respect to a potential false flag attack in Vancouver at the Winter Olympics. And there isn't, you know, there's a too cool for school phenomena that Canadians have. You know, and at some point you'll be sitting on your couch and, you know, your buddy will be beside you and say, hey, Christopher, you know, they're coming for your kidney. You might be like, yeah, so? And they'll come and take your kidney, and you'll sit there with a big hole in your side, and you'll be like, yeah, so what? You know, I'm not saying you specifically, but that's the kind of culture they're trying to create is for us to be too cool to do anything about our future. And
yeah.
and that's a staggering, staggering mind control where you can actually say you're way cooler for not giving a damn about anything at all than you are for giving a damn about anything. So that's something we have to deal with.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I think of people that are still sleeping, I think of them as hobbits who stayed home, like in The Lord of the Rings, you know, because you had Bilbo Baggins, and you had the hobbits who kind of braved going out into the world to fight the forces of oppression in the world. And then there were the hobbits who stayed home, and that's how I see people who are glued in front of their TV. I mean, you can get 50,000 people out to a baseball game or a basketball game, but you can't get 1,000 out to save your country or to stop being chemtrail sprayed or to stop, you know, inoculations that are going to poison people. You know, it's like people have no sense of, like, objective morality or the objective seriousness of different issues. You know, they're like hobbits who stay home in fear. And so, no, I often say it. Go ahead.
You know, Chris, I would just say that 10 informed hobbits could get 1,000 out if they worked at it. So my issue is not with the uninformed. I mean, if you're not informed about these issues, then that's not your fault. If you are informed about these issues and people around you are not informed about these issues, that is your fault. And that's the problem, I think that there is sort of like a baby eugenicist mentality among a lot of conspiracy theorists, truthers, anti-New World Order activists out there, which I've studied. I just say we act just like the elite do by picking on the public, and that separates us from them. And we constantly neurolinguistically reinforce, you know, how distant they are from us and how impossible it is to reach them. And so I think some of these ideas have been seeded into our culture, and I've been trying to get them out of there, because all I see is eugenics. When I see people talking about how stupid people are and so on, I just see eugenics. I see David Rockefeller talking. I see it when Alex Jones does it. I see it when I do it. I see it when you do it. I see it when everybody else I see does it, because it slips into our vocabulary. But what you see happening over time is that you get people who distance themselves further and further from the public, and then they get more isolated, and then they don't trust each other. Put it this way. If you and I are talking about the public like that, then we're not going to get much done. But if you see me talking to the public, like at the TorontoTruthSeekers.com street actions, and actually engaging people who've never come across this before, but who are open to what, you know, a fellow Canadian has to say and curious about why any Canadian in this country would take their time and effort and energy and money and goodwill to do this, then you might join, and you might say, you know what, that's a better way of looking at the public as being open vessels of information if we were to decide to deliver it, And the one thing that I want to try and help prove with TorontoTruthSeekers.com, among other people, because we all discuss these ideas, is that fact. Is that fact. It's not like the public can't wake up. It's not like the public can't handle and appreciate this information. We just have to get it to them. And we proved that for 6 months here on the streets of Toronto. So we got tons and tons of curiosity. And no one ever came back to us on Saturday and said we were wrong. No one ever came back there and said, you guys are wrong for giving this out. Screw you guys. I'm giving you, throwing this flyer in your face, and I'm going to get my H1N1 shot because I looked into what the doctors who question vaccines have to say, and they're all wrong. No one ever said that for 6 months straight.
No.
So we're in a great position, Chris, if we just realize that if we just realize our faults as truthers, which is that if we're not trying to communicate with people, we can't really blame them for not listening to us. And then realize that people are like open vessels of information now, and nobody will argue with you when you say things are bad. You just have to say it in a reasonable, polite way, and then give them something to do about it.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting also. It's like we don't lose members, like in the sense of people who wake up. Like once you wake up, in a way, you can't go back. So we're only adding to our... you know, number of people awakening. So, I mean, you see the movement, I think, spreading like wildfire around the world. There's so many issues that are being brought to a head. It's a very vital time and critical time in human history.
Well, absolutely. And I went to my friend Jenny and I from TorontoTruthSeekers.com went to a fluoride, a Get Fluoride Out meeting sponsored by, I believe, some sort of NGO. It's a little environmental group started up here in Toronto. And so it's kind of mainstream activism with a bit of, you know, fluoride is a harder core issue than most. But, you know, what's interesting is that a lot of these people know more about the system. So, for example, I said to my TorontoTruthSeekers.com colleagues when I gave them a report in this meeting, I said, they don't know about the New World Order, but they do know a lot about how to get fluoride out of our water, and that may be more important. Because honestly, like if we need to take the online investigations we do and apply them to real world situations, or we will never ever convince anybody, least of all ourselves, of the practical value of learning this. And we also won't feel empowered with the information. That's why I see a lot of people get crushed by this and frustrated, because they've never tried to apply themselves seriously to the idea of doing something productive with it. You can only work 18 hours a day on something like Alex Jones does, or the people I know do, if you are productive. You're scared until you take action. Once you take action, that gets rid of the fear. That's a Jones quote from yesterday, kind of in the stream of consciousness from the show I was listening to. And I agree. You know, I'm too busy to be scared. I'm too busy to be worried. I'm too busy to be stressed. I'm too busy to be bothered. I'm too busy to be annoyed easily. I'm too busy to dwell on things that are negative. Because there are things I'm looking forward to do that I think will have a difference, because I think my words and creativity and efforts can make a difference. And that in and of itself is important. So once you learn all this stuff, what you do with it's the key. Because just learning this stuff is not going to, you know, the globalists in the Masonic era of revelations that we're in, they're going to put out all sorts of stuff for us. And people can spend 24 hours a day on the internet finding out everything that they're up to without doing anything to stop, you know, what they're up to from affecting them. And that's a problem.
I think we do see the evidences, what the kind of truth movement, the effect it's having on in different areas. Like, you know, the Copenhagen was beaten back, like the global warming fraud was being exposed, and, you know, people questioned the underwear bomber, and now we question Haiti, like what instruments they might be using, and now we're looking, even before Vancouver and the Olympics are on, we're anticipating a false flag terrorist event there. It's like we've got their MO now, and because of that, it's making it more difficult for them.
I agree 100%, Chris, and I just think that, look, I think there's a lot of phenomenal work being done there. We have a good chance at winning against the New World Order and beating the New World Order because of those efforts. What I'd like to see, though, is I'd like to see it become much more natural for people to learn with a specific purpose as opposed to just learning. So if you get into fluoride, learn about fluoride, learn how it operates in your city, learn, you know, how much taxpayer money spend on it, learn, you know, how to get it out and who to pressure about this, and take that information and act on it. Because otherwise, there's a nasty habit, which, you know, I fell into, which lots of people I know fall into, of just sort of looking at this stuff for a year or two, before you, you know, and then by the time you've done that, sometimes you're so far down the rabbit hole that you don't feel like talking to anybody about it because it's just too crazy. And there's a simple problem reaction solution game that we can play with ourselves, where we see the problem, we develop a reaction that's sensible, and we come up with solutions. And once we do that with respect to elements of the New World Order's control system over entire culture, people will see it, because we'll be taking real-world situations that they see every day, and we can track them back to the New World Order, and we can track them back to who's responsible in our culture and to what we can do about it.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, I don't know if we've had any luck yet. I asked the station maybe to see if they can get our next guest on. Our next guest is going to join us is Dan Merchant. And Dan is part of developing the Agora newspaper, which is published and distributed in Vancouver, British Columbia. And this is a radical, well, not a radical newspaper, but a really open, free press that is reporting a lot of the truth that the corporate press won't even touch upon. And I don't know, is Dan there in the background? Okay, so we don't have Dan, but we'll hold on there, BK, and we'll be joined by Dan. Have you seen the first copies of the Agora, BK?
I've seen the Agora online. I do like it as a newspaper. They're pretty varied in their content. But I've seen some pretty key, hard-hitting articles in there on the SPP.gov, North American Union, and so on. So, yeah, I'm familiar with it. I think it's great.
Yeah, they had excellent articles on the swine flu hoax. Kevin Annette gave some shocking kind of reporting on child abuse in BC, and some major articles in there. Okay, well, we'll just continue on, and if Dan comes in, he'll just have to speak up, and we'll get him to tell us a little bit about their efforts. So, I think that's really good, BK, that you take up issues that are most contemporary, like where you switched your efforts over into the vaccination opposition was really important. And hopefully a lot of Canadians didn't get the vaccines who might have if we hadn't made the efforts that we did, that were made.
Well, you know, there's a gentleman named Michael who came along to our last meetup last Saturday at Jack Astor's, where about 20 of us got together and kind of specialized. And I'm thinking long-term when it comes to this stuff, so I'm thinking of different ways to brand our movement in non-threatening ways, as they're planning on calling us terrorists. So, you know, there's certain things on my mind when it comes to securing the safety of people in this country. But with respect to reacting to things, Michael, who's a Vietnam War resistor, said in the 1960s that he dropped out of college and was activizing against the Vietnam War for a year with little handbills, or what we call flyers today, and posters and so on. And he said the trick back then, and it's probably the same trick today, was that people would see the handbills making more sense about issues than the media at the same time, and they would be more interested in learning more. And it's easier today than ever for people to do that. So all we have to do is take topics that the media are discussing in some detail and give people a better explanation for, you know, the nature of those topics, why they're being given to us, what the plans are, and what we can do about them. And then people will say, you guys make a lot more more sense, more consistently than the media does. So I think we have to react to everything. The Vancouver Olympics, the security police state there. We should explain to people, you know, why we shouldn't accept the type of security we're going to see on TV as we watch the Olympics, and why we shouldn't accept that becoming normal in our culture as part of historical, tyrannical operations. When people get a sense of that, then they'll say, you know what, I'm going to feel bad when I see that, as opposed to feel good or feel nothing, and we'll habitualize that response to rejecting these ideas.
Yeah, we just see the importance of a truth media, and I think we may have our guest on. Dan, are you there?
I'm here, yes.
Yeah, okay. Well, I'm pleased to introduce, this is Dan Merchant, and Dan is one of the co-founders of the Agora, and you've come out with your second issue a week or two ago, Dan. Maybe
our third issue we came out with here.
Oh, you've come out with the third?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Excellent. Maybe you could describe the Agora and your distribution and the focus of the newspaper?
Sure, yeah. Well, first of all, thanks for having me on. And, the Agora is a user-generated newspaper. We're based out of Vancouver, B.C. right now. And basically, we take articles and submissions from any source, be it online or people submitting stuff to us by email or any other mode. And if it's well written and interesting and fits a few other of our basic criteria, we'll try our best to get it in the paper, depending on space. And, you know, first come, first serve is usually the way we like to do it. So what we're doing is creating an open media platform for anybody to use to get their views and opinions out through the print media.
And your first issues were beautifully produced, like with color photos through them and all illustrated and each a wide range of subjects. And you don't seem to back down. You had things on the swine flu, all of the major issues. I mean, this is really quite unique. Is there anything else along your line in Canada? I don't know of anything quite so open.
I don't think so. I think we're kind of pioneering a new way to put news media together, especially in the print form here. So, we basically don't back down as long as we're not going to get sued. We try and cover our bases in that regard, but we'll basically print whatever people send us, and as long as it can be verified through, you know, a few different ways, we do that. We'll get it into the paper. We won't really back down due to the content of it. We have no specific focus on a certain type of issue, be it like right-wing, left-wing, political ideologies. We basically will put in anything into the paper that people want.
I heard this morning, Dan, I knew that Kevin Annett had had a shocking article, his series, but especially in your last Agora about the child sex rings in BC and the involvement of people in the RCMP and the government, and that was a pretty shocking article. And I heard today the RCMP made a major bust in BC. Had you heard that?
I'm not sure if it was in BC. I thought it was back east there. But yeah, somebody producing and selling child pornography. I think I heard about that.
No. This was a report that they had actually rescued 12 children that were had been taken by a pedophile ring, and I think it was in BC.
Wow.
So I heard the report just this morning on, I think it was CBC. So it was funny hearing that report. I connected it with Kevin's pretty condemning article of the RCMP. Like, he's brave to pen such an article.
Yeah, he definitely is. That's why we definitely like to give him a voice as much as possible, either to keep him safe or to get his information out there, and hopefully it's making a difference. I mean, in this case here in BC that you're referring to,
you have excellent articles. You had Wayne Pronti in there, who does such important work against the swine flu and against it with the War Criminals Out group. Just an excellent array of articles. Quite a unique publication. BK, you're there. BK's also seen the Agora and is a fan of the paper. Any comments or questions to Dan?
Well, sure. A brief comment. Dan, good to meet you. I've talked about Kevin Annett's work on my radio show at CKLN Radio in Toronto as well. In a nutshell, we fall into a trap, sort of people who are questioning the mainstream. where people try and put us in a left-right paradigm, where are you coming from? And it becomes about our opinion sometimes, according to some people, when we try and communicate this. But what we found at TorontoTruthSeekers.com during the summer is that when it wasn't about us, when it was about saving children from the dangers and risks of vaccines, and the H1N1 vaccine in particular, but all vaccines in general, people could relate to us on a different level, because it wasn't about us being right about what we've researched or Googled or our political opinions. It was about us saving children. So I think the issues that the Agora covers, including Kevin Annette's work, if they do involve children and children in this country being harmed by sort of systemic corruption behind the scenes, something we've known about since Conspiracy of Silence and the Franklin cover-up 25 years ago, it's a key issue, because it shows people that this is not a left-right issue, this is not political football, it's not about our team winning, this is about saving children, and that can maybe break through to some people that would normally reject anybody coming with anything political to discuss.
Yeah, absolutely. That's why we like to kind of we focus on that, because it's such an important issue to say, like, the kids are our future, right? So we need to get that issue out into the forefront as much as possible. And I find a lot of media around in BC here doesn't like to cover certain issues surrounding children. We got a story in our second paper as well. It's called "Who's Protecting Our Children," and it goes into the Ministry of Children and Family Development, and how there's systemic corruption throughout it, and a lot of the children aren't getting the care that they need, and a lot of the people who are running it and have different jobs within it aren't following through up to standard, and a lot of children as a result of that are being harmed. So we're following through with that story as well here, and we're just trying to hold the people accountable who should be held accountable. Related to that story, the Who's Protecting Our Children one, we're calling out not all BC politicians, but a lot of BC politicians here who have been told about it by somebody on the inside who's witnessed a lot of the abuse of children throughout the ministry. And they've been told about it, but have yet to really do anything about it, yet to bring it up, yet to try and find a solution for it. So we want those people who have the power to do something to step forward when they're told about children being abused and actually do something. They're there to protect the children, and if our elected representatives aren't going to do it, then we definitely have to start standing up and speaking louder and doing it for them.
And bringing that kind of exposure, like getting it out into print so that, you know, people are starting to learn, it backs them off things they might otherwise go ahead with.
Yeah, I definitely think I think that's true. And hopefully, we're a smaller paper here, but hopefully, like, we, as we print and we get a little bit bigger, it'll force the other media to cover it. Because if we're covering it and they're not, then it definitely looks bad on them. So that's one of our other hopes here, is that by doing this on a smaller level, it's going to force the bigger players to start covering it more in depth and stop marginalizing the information and not I don't know if they're deliberately not printing a lot of it, but I know it seems to be maybe a bit of a conspiracy of silence. They don't go into the details like they have the knowledge about the details. They just kind of try and whitewash it a little bit and make it seem to have less impact, that it's not such a big problem.
I must say, I see it as intentional, systematic distortion that's how I see the corporate media, and I mean, I think the editorial control comes from above, and I think the people in the corporate media need to be freed from the tyrants who control them. I had an incident where I went to a press conference against the SPP in Ottawa, and I was one of the major networks had a TV crew that was leaving halfway through the conference, like they didn't even cover it fully. And I said to them as they walked out, "You must be ashamed of what you do." And the woman in the group said to me, "We are." Because, you see, and it shocked me, but I realized, like, I think the people in the media, they don't like what they do. because they don't go into the media to intentionally deceive the Canadian population. Like, people don't go in with those intentions. They get into a corrupted system, and then they have the control from above them that gives them talking points and that censors them, and if they ever step out of line, they lose their job. So they live under that tyranny. And I feel sorry for the people in the corporate media for that reason. Any comments? Yeah. BK, how do you see?
Just a quick comment on that. Absolutely, I agree with you 100%. But one of the points that we've tried to make for a couple of years here on the streets with TorontoTruthSeekers.com and before that, Toronto 9/11 Truth, is the idea that, you know, people who are in positions where they could lose their job because of what they say are in much more difficult positions than people like us, who can comment about their jobs more freely. So instead of expecting the media to act, we should expect the media to react when we do things. And so I've seen Vancouver 9/11 Truth on CBC News at a protest when Bush came to town or Harper came to town or something, and we've been covered by the CBC at Toronto Truth Seekers. And we need to give journalists on the inside a way to cover us by doing something impressive. I got my, when I was campaign managing for Dr. Andrew Molden in October 2008, I got my 1,500-word anti-New World Order screed published in the North Bay Nugget, unedited, online. It said published, unedited. And they also made a PDF copy, so it's easier for people to print and share as well. The North Bay Nugget, the only paper really in North Bay, the big one there. And they published it unedited, because I would source things. I sourced Bill C-51 and 52 at the time, later Bill C-6. I would give a sentence, like Harper was given the code of 2007 Code of Silence Award, and I'd put in brackets Yahoo News, you know, May 13, 2007, or whatever. And I would do it carefully. So it wasn't me, you know, ranting in a paranoid way like I've seen often done. The Rothschilds control everything, wake up people, everything's bad. It wasn't that. It was sort of a carefully laid out argument, and the editors on the inside could sell to their bosses why they published that. Or if we're on the streets for months and we're giving out hundreds of flyers or thousands of flyers and people know us in the city, then a reporter, journalist, you know, whatever, could sell inside why they're covering that. And the editor, if they're a spook or if their boss is a spook or whatever, would have a tough time suppressing that. So we've got to do stuff for where the media can react to what we do, and we've got to have some sympathy for police, for soldiers, for nurses, doctors, people in all these professions, in a fascist system, we have to try and free them. Heck, I was quoted in September 2007, Chris, in the National Post, after we went to a Mason open house at U of T, the National Post reporter asked, "Why are you here?" And we're here to free the Masons. So,
to free the Masons.
That's right.
Yeah.
It's right there in the National Post. So the point is that we will, and we were covered in the Post, and it was actually a pretty fair article. Didn't make us look good, but it made us look like we looked, and they described everything, and they said angry 9/11 truthers with so-called pamphlets, but they laid out everything accurately, and they quoted us. And so when it comes to this, and Dan, maybe you can speak to this as well, you know, with what you're doing, you're actually going to make their jobs easier, because they'll get to cover more truth, because more truth is out there, more people know, and it'll be something that the public wants.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think with our paper here, as these reporters who work for the mainstream media corporations, conglomerates see it, and they realize that we will not hold back, and we're actually a true source of information, open source, my hope is it'll draw a lot of these good writers and these good reporters and investigative journalists to our paper, and it'll actually give them an outlet where they won't be censored, and they can do what they originally intended that they were going to do when they got into the field of journalism. So that's one of our main goals too, is to get the good people out of the system and into a new free sort of media system.
Maybe. Dan, I was going to ask you, can you give out the address that people who want to see the Agora can go and see? How do they access the first copy?
Yeah, sure. The website is theagoranational.ca.
Okay, theagoranational.ca. Okay.
Yeah, CHEAGORA national.ca.
Okay, and people can go there and review your first issues, and they can submit things through the website?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, we have both of the first and the second and the third issue available in PDF online, and you can go and get subscriptions online, and we'll mail it out if you're not in the Vancouver area. Every month we can mail it out.
It would be so nice to see you expand nationwide, which you're hoping if you get people in other parts of the country who support your project, and they could even have kind of locally designed issues of the Agora.
That's correct. Yeah, in our next print run here in March, we actually have a North Okanagan issue being created, and we're expanding out onto the island and also into the Kootenays in BC here, and it looks like hopefully we'll be able to get something going in Quebec there as well. We're working on that right now, too.
Yeah, excellent. I know at one point I'd hoped to do something with you along that line in Ottawa, but haven't yet been clear enough to kind of get to the point of being able to follow up with that. But I hope that people hearing that who might want to support bringing the Agora into your local community to contact the people at the Agora and express your interest.
Yeah, and also along that point there, what we're trying to do here as well is create an actual economically viable way to do activism. Because with a paper like this, eventually when it gets up and running in an area, it's actually a fairly good way to make money. So instead of toiling away, as many activists do, although for very good causes, through the paper, they actually have the opportunity to make a good living at it and provide a living to other activists as well around in their community. So it does take work. I won't lie about that, but definitely that's what we're hoping that people will see, that you don't have to give up a whole bunch of your time and not have any financial incentive coming your way, right? So with this, you can make money, and you can get the truth out there in a way that has a really, really big impact.
Yeah, it's so valuable. It's just so valuable to have access to this type of information in a newspaper format. And so it's distributed freely, too, the Agora. It's excellent. You worked out your distribution within Vancouver. Do you do it at major bookstores or health food stores?
Yep, bookstores, health food stores. We basically target all the high traffic areas where people go, coffee shops and stuff like that. We put out 10,000 around Vancouver, and then in March we're going to 20,000 in Vancouver. So we're doubling our size and expanding as quickly as we can here.
And are you getting much response from people or feedback or encouragement?
Yeah, it's actually really amazing. We're getting just fantastic feedback. Lots of articles submitted from people who, they've always wanted a place where they could write stuff, write down their thoughts and their opinions and have it printed. So we're getting quite a few submissions. We're getting people donating. And every time we go and we distribute, more and more people know about it.
Yeah.
And they tell us how much they appreciate it. So it's definitely getting out there and having an impact.
Well, earlier, Dan, we were talking, BK and I, about the threat of a false flag terrorist event at the Olympics coming up. I think you had an article on that in your last issue, didn't you, the concern about that?
Yeah, we did. Yeah. We did. It's called Stand Down, actually, I think is what it was called there.
Yeah.
Olympic Stand Down. Yeah, anything can happen. I mean, if false flag attack were to happen, it would obviously be able to galvanize probably most Canadians into supporting whatever war of conquest that it was designed to create. So, it's definitely a possibility. I'm just hoping for the best, obviously, and trying to get the word out that it could happen, and possibly, I don't know, that would stop it from happening. But if it doesn't stop it from happening, then we have the concrete evidence that there was proof that we knew, well, maybe not proof so much, but there was a theory that it could happen and the reasons why it would happen. So no, it's bearing witness to the possibility before it happens.
Has a great I mean, we know there must be people in the police and intelligence community, like they're getting their heads up too, like they're starting to realize, hey, like there's something weird going on here behind the scenes. And I mean, these people lie to their own officers and such.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I just hope if anybody does have an idea, any of those people on the inside, if they do know what's going on, if there is anything going to happen, I mean, I just hope that they'll come out and at least get some sort of information out there that might stop it or try and make the people who want to do that stand down. Basically, is what we need.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they certainly can't get away with it as easily as they did back in September of 2001. Like, it's just not the same audience anymore. We're kind of got their MO and we're onto their tricks. BK,
we're getting pretty used to Harper being a fascist prime minister too, suspending parliament 2 years in a row. So I have some concerns about how used to, you know, Harper acting this way we are, because if they do pull a false flag attack and Harper decides to declare martial law, most Canadians probably wouldn't be surprised based on how he's acted as prime minister for the last few years.
Yeah, it's true. I know, so we're coming down. We've got about eight more minutes. I'll turn it back to you, Dan. So when is the next issue? How often are you publishing now? Is it every 2 weeks?
We're publishing monthly right now.
Monthly, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, great.
Yeah,
and so you're preparing your fourth issue now.
Yep, we're preparing the fourth issue, and actually we just moved the full color as well in the February issue, so we have 40 pages full color, just an immense amount of information. It'll take about a month to go through, probably, so we print it every 2 weeks, people would miss half the stuff, probably.
Yeah, well, it's an excellent newspaper, and it's a major public service. You know, a lot of Canadians, we owe you a lot for for starting up a venture like this. We just have to have alternative media.
It's critical for the fight for freedom and the fight for truth, justice, and knowledge. I mean, that to me is the key, is to have a free, open place that people can come and just talk about what they want to talk about and have it printed and not controlled. And eventually, too, I mean, with the radio stations such as yours, if they're growing in popularity and getting onto the AM and the FM channels as well, is something that people should be trying to do and look at as well. Because as the print industry is kind of dying in Canada here, because the way that they structure themselves is outdated, the dinosaur sort of structure, and it's imploding. And as it implodes, and as the TV ratings go down, and as the mainstream radio ratings go down, we have an opportunity to come in with the types of information that people actually want to hear. So we do need to step up and start creating what we want to see. Be the change we want to see, and don't wait for somebody else to do it.
Yeah, excellent, Dan. So once again, can you give out your website once more?
Yeah, the website is theagoranational.ca. That's theagoranational.ca.
Yeah, so thanks, Dan, for being on the show today, and I follow your paper, and I hope we'll have you back at some future time.
Sure, thanks, Chris, anytime.
Okay, yep. Goodbye.
Thanks.
BK.
Yes, Christopher. It's great.
Yeah.
I think that it's great that the Agora is giving people out there a chance to express themselves, because we all have frustrations about this. But if we, you know, take time to carefully craft our frustrations, source them, and articulate them, I will feel better about it, and other people will benefit. Because if you're speaking up, you're not just speaking for yourself. You're probably speaking for other people that are too scared to speak up yet.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's you know, just another thing that could be handed out with DVDs or as well, you know. Yeah, it's excellent, that new venture in Canada. I hope that Agora spreads and gets support for their work. So what's upcoming for you, BK? We've got a couple minutes. Just maybe any final comments you'd like to have, or any upcoming activities and how people can contact you.
Sure, absolutely. You can contact me at blackkrishna@gmail.com. You can see my work at blackkrishna.blogspot.com. My radio show, Mondays, Tuesdays, and Thursdays, 6 a.m. to 7 a.m. on KLN 88.1 FM in Toronto, or CKLN.FM. You can find more details, just Google Black Krishna. But with respect to the projects in the city, there's sort of two things that are on my mind and on my plate. Of particular note, three actually. One is TorontoTruthSeekers.com, getting a functional group going that's got a number of projects on a regular basis for truthers to choose from, kind of like a truther buffet. So in your email inbox and so on, as part of this group, you're going to see so many things going on, eventually you'll probably just choose to join one, and so we're facilitating that. The mayoral campaign in this city, I've been laundering my efforts through Toronto Truth Seekers, but I'm going to step that up a bit more. I am running for mayor in this city, but I'm studying kind of what the other guys are doing first and the conditions of the city, and so I've got a report on that coming shortly. Finally, music. Music gets me in the mood to handle these, all sorts of music, aggressive music. As long as your focus is fighting the New World Order, you can take some of the New World Order's brilliant programming tools and program yourself to get in the mood to. So a little bit of music, reading the work of great patriots, hearing patriots on talk radio, you know, whatever it takes to get yourself in the mood to take action is something that I think is important for everyone to consider. Religion as well. If your religion is not helping you get stronger and better at fighting the New World Order, then either it's no good or you're doing it wrong. So no matter what metric you choose, you know, you have to realize that taking action, feeling your own strength and being confident in your own voice at this time in history to make a real difference, not a difference that's certified by the corporate media, but a real difference that challenges the corporate media and what we've all been given to say and think, is something that everyone is capable of. If you're capable of understanding this information, Christopher, then you're capable of articulating your thoughts on this information, at least in my opinion. And if more of us do that, then we're in pretty good shape in this country.
Yeah, and we just need to keep just redoubling our efforts, and we're making progress, and it's I see people like you, BK, and Dan, you know, I see you as the warriors of a new age. Like they're people, you know, if we can break through this madness, we can help to bring about a new age, and the potential is there, and yeah, we just have to be dogged in our efforts. So thank you, BK, for being a guest again, and I'm sure we'll have you back again in the future.
Thanks so much, Christopher. Shout-outs to BBS Radio. Take care, everybody.
Okay, goodbye. Okay, so that was BK, activist from Toronto, Canada, and Dan Merchant, associated with the Agora newspaper in Vancouver. So we've had a wide range of topics on today's show, and both kind of mystical studies and then trying to address the world situation. I think in this time, some people think just being spiritual means just in a way just something within yourself, and in a way I think we're facing, there's a spiritual war going on this planet, and for us to be spiritual we have to try to be upright of heart and abide in that and do what we can, because the soul of humankind is at stake in this battle. This new world disorder nightmare is a nightmare. And it's based on the denial of human dignity and value in individual life. And we can turn these things around. And hopefully, by the grace of God, we'll have instant karma someday. And these people, even the President of the United States, must sometime have to stand naked, as Bob Dylan says. Okay, thank you all. Thank you, BBS Radio. And, yeah. We'll be back in 2 weeks' time. Remember yourself and keep heart. Goodbye.